everybody. Welcome, one and all, boys and girls, test tube babies, and chemtrail afflicted generations of Morgellons disease sufferers to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, there's a little chat room in there. You can go in there and talk amongst other people who are talking off topic and don't really follow the broadcast for some reason. I don't know what the heck is going on there or why people look at chat rooms. I'm kind of not looking at it anymore. My very special guest today is Neil Kramer, I believe, from neilkramer.com. That's Kramer with a K, as in the 1979 film Kramer versus Kramer. But I don't think he's split personality like that. He's got books, DVDs, and downloads available at his website, neilkramer.com, for you. And we're going to have a wee bit of a nice open plan discussion here, kind of like with a beautiful house with indoor-outdoor flow. Neil, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you doing?
Well, you know, somewhat fabulous. Had a really good weekend, and like a web page, I too am now refreshed.
Fantastic. Who could ask for more?
Yes. Now, I actually must ask for more. Would you tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do, my friend?
Certainly, yeah. Well, I am a British philosopher, and I write books, and I speak to people, and I teach mysticism, practical mysticism. I discuss consciousness, metaphysics, and generally speaking, try and bring the light, wonderful things, and the dark, weird things to some sort of central point, as you might say. And so most of my work is dealt with empowerment, basically, turning, as you would say in your opening song, the sleepers into something slightly different, but only those who choose to take it upon themselves to do that. So, yeah, that's what I do. And I've been doing this for about 10 years, full-time, you might say. And as with everyone else, secretly been doing it in the background all the other time as well. And yeah, that's it. So some people will be aware of what I do and some people will not. But as you said before, they can check it out at neilkramer.com and there's plenty of things to look at there.
How long have you been going about this?
Well, in the States, I've been here for about 3 years. And in England, where I was doing the same thing for about 5, 6, 7 years there. So full-time, as I said, about 9 or 10 years, I would say. And I sort of bring a philosophical approach to some of the issues rather than getting too doomy about it or rather than running around with our crystals on the mountaintops. I don't think either of those two things work particularly well. And yet, as you might call it, the light and the shadow aspects of that, the polarities of it, as you yourself know, just having a scan over your webpage, you have to take all that into account and you have to build in some humour and some humanity into it as well and say, yeah, we are talking about some pretty heavy, weird stuff. Yes, we are talking about demons in the world, in one way of saying it. And yet, it's all within our control and it is all something that we consent to. And that's a sort of underlying principle in my work, that you can't really have anything bad done to you unless you yourself consent to it.
Mm, the way I look at it is, don't worry, it's just the end of the world.
That's right. The end of the world, the end of, as my friend Spencer says, the world is a way of doing things, and sometimes that needs to change. So the end of the world could be rather good, couldn't it?
Yeah. No more taxes or police state, you know. A lot of people were worried about this 2012 thing. What was your philosophy and thought process going up to the 21st, 2012?
Well, my sort of background studying occultism and mystical traditions and theosophy and Rosicrucianism and you know, the spiritual movement and all these kind of things, you get used to prophecy, you get used to dates coming and going. And after a while, you realize that this has been going on for a long time. And there are all kinds of alignments and calendars and cycles that start what wibble about and then end, right? And we tend to dramatize the endings a little bit. And from what I can see, that's been going on for a long time. So 2012 is another one of those for me. And to put it bluntly, I trust my own feeling about those things, and I didn't feel anything as a sort of cataclysmic intuition. I didn't feel anything at all. So mine was, well, it's a peak on the graph of things are getting very, very weird. There's no question about that. And some of the shadows in the world are getting very thick and very black indeed. But as no doubt you see in your line of work, the wonderful things are getting pretty awesome. And the people who are taking it upon themselves to change and to think differently and live differently are really starting to do that now in a very vivid way. So you could say that 2012 marks that out. And if the Mayans were as clever as they might appear to be, they weren't really talking about chronological time. They were talking about like cycles of consciousness. And they said, yeah, this is the pinnacle where, as Terence McKenna might have said, there's a peak of dynamism. You know, things are really mixed up, really, really mixed up. And that's a good thing because there's a lot of opportunity to do things differently. So I have a very optimistic view of 2012. And, you know, one can't help but notice all the embarrassment of the people who were saying there's going to be this enormous trans-dimensional shift and stuff. And people who were, you know, burying themselves in the ground in Australia and North America and Eastern Europe and stuff. Everyone's free to do that, and it's kind of funny and kind of stupid, but it just goes to show that if your only input is through the page and the screen, you're going to get off track pretty fast. So I always encourage people to actually get out and determine these things for themselves. You know, speak to real people, go get into nature, walk through the cities, you know, actually commune with the world. Don't just mess about on forums and, you know, argue points and debate and stuff. That's absolutely pointless.
I agree. Everything's getting better and worse at the same time. And
yeah,
if you don't experience it for yourself, you don't know which is which.
Yeah, that's it. And I think it is as simple as that. It's, you have to build the confidence in yourself to think, maybe I do know best. Maybe I can determine something just as well as anyone else. And we don't need sort of alternative superstars to do it for us. We don't need a kind of conspiracy celebrity culture. And in fact, some people who have ego problems can fall foul of that. And you almost have to remove the individual from the work sometimes. I mean, there's a lot of people who walk the talk, but there's a hell of a lot of people who don't. And it's funny that there's like subgenres that split off in this field now of the light workers and the conspiracy people and the scholars and the researchers. And, you know, you have to navigate that, don't you, and try and develop this discernment yourself to think what's valuable and what isn't.
Well, it's really funny you should mention this because Roy from Rush FM, they play my show here in New Zealand, right? Mm. He gave me a call this morning. And we had a talk for about an hour or so. And part of the conversation was that I just found out over the weekend that I'm a celebrity, that I went out to film a dance party for a friend of mine, and I had people coming up to me, you know, who recognized me and then started having conversations. And he was advising me not to let it go to my head and things like that. And I said, well, you know, the first thing I normally do is, well, you listen to me, you subscribe to me, would you like a hug? You know, and have a big old snuggly. I'm kind of like 6'4" ish, so I give these man bear hugs, and as opposed to the man bear pig hug, and it's really quite awesome because I'm afraid of ego going out of control for me, and I think it's because I'm aware of the kind of monster I could be. It'll actually prevent me from becoming it.
Yeah, and that, well, you have a tool, don't you, which I've kind of noticed already, which is you build humour into your learning process, don't you? So you're not going to separate them two things out anytime soon. And I think guys in your neck of the woods, in your part of the world, and where I come from, which is in the north of England, like Manchester, Liverpool, Newcastle, all those areas, humour is kind of right built into the culture there. And so you can never get too far up your own arse, if you forgive the expression, because your mates are always going to make fun of you. And even you yourself, you tend to have this healthy sort of comical aspect to it. And I think for some people it's disturbing that, because they like to treat it very seriously and have this very somber tone. And you know, let's be melodramatic and pretend that we're, doing something of great solemnity here, you know? And I don't think that's very helpful. I think that part of the secret power of the humans, if you like, and our real capacity for change is based in humour, is based in saying you can be very serious and very silly at the same time, and almost intermingle them a little bit. And it tends to sort of diffuse any negativity that. So you can talk about stuff and say, you know, there are these weird things going on in the world, and there are these funny groups of disturbed entities who come together and try and plot things to keep men dim-witted. That definitely goes on. But some of those people are dicks. Some of those people are like really poor examples of consciousness, and would be like just getting pushed around in the schoolyard. And it's kind of revenge of the geeks, you know, revenge of the nerds in a way. So I sometimes think that a lot of these people who might have been pretty rubbish at high school and, you know, have no coolness even in the little toe, once they get the suits on and the billions of dollars and they start moving around in certain circles, suddenly they're wreaking revenge on their fellow man, and it's their egos that are getting out of control. So, yeah, they lack humour, don't they, the New World Order? They lack humour, which is going to be their downfall.
Yeah, and also particularly those who are in entertainment, business and politics. The American Medical Journal states that they're the most likely to be the places where psychopaths would gather. And I was just thinking to myself, something Roy told me this morning, as I referred to earlier.
Yeah.
He said some people get seduced by the microphone, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And they develop a personality that's not them.
They do. And it's like if somebody was keeping an eye on what you're doing and thinking, you know, here's a bright, young, clever guy, very presentable in front of the camera. Let's get him over to Los Angeles, let's give him a TV show, let's throw money at him and take him off course, right? That happens in this game. People fall foul of that, and you can almost forgive it and thinking, well, you know, you're reaching people, you're getting a bigger audience. But if you scratch under the surface of these shows that talk about aliens and Bigfoot and UFOs and the New World Order, when you see them on television, on these cable channels or whatever in the States and elsewhere, they're kind of always crap and always shallow. And it's a very sort of synthetic and shallow treatment of a big subject. And I think people have had enough of that. So they're starting to replace mainstream media with shows like this. So instead of like subscribing to, you know, cable or satellite, instead, what they're doing is they're accumulating videos and playlists and MP3s of stuff like this and throwing it on their devices and building their own media. So the independent element of this, and I talk about this to some degree in my book, The Unfoldment, the independent media is now, through technology, reaching similar, sometimes better, production standards than mainstream corporate media. And so there's no real gap anymore. Anyone who can be bothered and who can generate time and resources and flexibility to do it can go out and make a decent media product, whether it's a book or a movie or a radio show or whatever. And I think that's pretty encouraging. And it does have the old-fashioned law, which if it's good, it lasts. And if it's not good, it fizzles away. So that still seems to work, and I think that's a good thing. So, you know, the shows that I listen to and like conform to that guideline, really. Because there's a lot of people who, you know, create YouTube channels that sort of just disappear and come and go, and there's loads of comments and everyone's arguing, and it's kind of rubbish. So you have to, in creating alternative media, learn to be a professional, don't you? You know, learn to understand what is that for you? How do we bring that level of professionalism and good high conduct into our work, and yet still maintain that sort of fierce individualism where no one's going to tell us what to do. And we might have to be a little careful with our language so we don't upset people, but only in the way that you would sat with your mum and dad or something. You know, it's not like going to take us off message because AOL are sponsoring it. You know, that's not going to happen. That's not independent.
Mm. Do you believe people in this movement should avoid getting sponsorship with large corporations and things for that very reason?
Depends, doesn't it? If Coca-Cola came to me and said, "We're going to pay for you to go around the world and philosophize and put a 6-part TV show together," I'd say, "Yeah, brilliant. Show me the money."
You could do the philosophizzy drink tour.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe.
All right, we'll be right back after the break with Neil Kramer from neilkramer.com. There are books, DVDs and downloads there, and essays and teaching and all sorts of other stuff. He's a busy, busy bee. Back in a minute at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest today is Neil Kramer from neilkramer.com. That's Kramer with a K, as in Kramer versus Kramer. Now, getting on to the whole advertising thing, there's a lot of criticism to people who take advertisers on, like certain advertisers or certain products or certain things or certain that or whatever. They think that it loses their credibility. And I remember one time there was a poker gambling company that approached myself and said, "We'll give you $120 to turn one word on one blog post of yours into a link to a gambling site, and we'll give you $120 US, right?" Mm. And They also wanted to know if I had any friends or anything of that nature who also wanted to do that. And I took the money, and I can guarantee you nobody ever clicked that link. And then I sent it over to my friend John Eisen, who does this wonderful magazine here, Uncensored Magazine, and he also does the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. And I was just trying to get them $120 that they wouldn't really have to do anything for, you know what I'm saying? And they rejected it because it was against their morals. And I thought to myself, man, that's really strange. I mean, you know, I can understand where they're coming from with that. However, I remember what Jack Blood said. There's two general rules if you want to be successful for a long period of time doing activism. One is drink. If you don't have a few drinks every now and again, you'll go absolutely crazy. And two is take the money. You know, if you're not actually doing anything immoral, just take the money. Come on, you're not going to use it for buying heroin and then on selling it to children like the CIA, are you?
No, and that's it, isn't it? Because if you can be very moralistic about this and say, look, I'm going to just follow this very strict code of ethics and principles and, you know, a sort of granola people, they call them here in the States, where it's all muesli kind of driven thinking, right? And, you know, you're like, oh, the chemtrails and the fluoride and the MSG and the this and the that and the special frequency of the 1080 HD screen, and it does this to you. And if you wanted to truly stay away from all the potentially weird, real bad resonances, you would be in a little lead-lined box underground in a cave, or, you know, floating in a hot air balloon somewhere or something. And it's like, well, you can do that. It is possible to extract yourself from negative resonances like that, chemical, electrical, mineral, whatever. But you're going to miss out on the interaction with life. You're going to actually miss out on the juice of life. So I have a bit of a punk attitude to it, which is, I will take your money, and if you're good, then it will be a good reflection for you. And if it's bad money, let's say, if it's blood money of some description, I'll take that and convert it into something else. So as to use our
example, like euros,
if Coca-Cola presented me with an option, say, or McDonald's, you know, let's say a company who is not producing brilliant products, and they're kind of exploiting poverty-stricken nations and ethnic minorities, in a sense, it seems to me. Although, of course, you know, that's just an alleged remark. But let's say some big, huge conglomerate hyper company like that, you could take that money and do something useful with it. You know, you could do that. But if you go too far the other way, it's like the sort of fundamentalist Buddhist principle where you can't drive your car down the freeway because you're going to hit a fly on the windscreen and generate death, you know. And it's like, well, bollocks to that. You've just got to do what the best you can and use it in the best way you can. And that gangster capitalism isn't going to be reflected in the way I use money. I use money just to create resources to grow and learn and share and, you know, empower myself and other people. And that's not going to change anytime soon. So wherever it comes from, you know, it could be from some drug deal and I find a suitcase buried, you know, in a dumpster somewhere. And where that came from might be very disreputable and very questionable. But once it's in my hands, something quite interesting is going to happen with it. So I think it's like you could look at it alchemically in that sense. And, you know, you use your common sense as well. And if it's some absolute dreadful, you know, organization, you might say, look, no, not really. But if you can alchemize that money and say, look, I know it's from a bit odd, it's a bit dubious, it's a bit corporate, and we don't like that. But right now, the reality of the situation is that I can use that to make something honorable and true and human, and I'm going to do that. So that's my view, a just very pragmatic view.
Yeah. If you were given $50 million by let's say, the Rothschild family.
Yeah.
And then you use that $50 million to create a media empire to expose the Rothschild family.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the principle is funny, isn't it? It's ironic. It's like saying, if you want to give money to me, they're either doing it because they want to generate something true and creative, or they want to take someone off course, or they want to change the message. So, like, if Oprah Winfrey said, oh, you're quite good, you're like somebody who can help people get their life in order and so on, come on my show, I would do. I wouldn't have any hesitation to do that. But I also know that even with money dangled under my nose, if some producer or the director or whatever says, listen, you can't talk about this, you can't do that, you've got to do this with your hair, you've got to wear this, and don't ever mention these words, and really what we want you to talk about is this, I'd just walk off. I know that I'm capable of that. I'm not gullible enough where that's going to be, you know, I'm going to be sidelined because I lack the confidence. So as long as you know that you've got the confidence to give any situation the finger where it deserves it, I think you're all right. And it's a matter of self-control and self-confidence, isn't it? Whereas if you know you're a bit gullible, or you know that you could be influenced because secretly you just want to be a rock star, then you're probably going to get taken off course. And you do see that in this field now and again.
Mm. If you are the person that's in the limelight or whatever, you can take control, or you can have control taken over you.
Yeah, back to what I said earlier, it's consent, isn't it? So nobody gets my consent unless I can sort of feel the honour in what they're doing. You know, and I don't mean like some highfalutin sort of moralistic thing. I just mean like a true human expression of life. If I can feel that in a person, and that is an ability one develops over time, then cool, you know, we can do stuff together. If I don't feel that, if I look into Barack Obama's eyes or Mitt Romney's eyes and think, you're an empty soul, then I'll choose not to interact with that person. And it's the same whoever they are.
Yep, that's true. I've had to say to many people, look, I'm sorry, I can't trust you. Goodbye.
Yeah, that's right. And it's just we're doing different things here. They're like manipulating energy and you're trying to refine it and purify it and say what is real. And they're doing the opposite. So it's like, look, we're doing opposites here. It might not work too well. So good luck. See ya.
Do you ever worry that you might get on a high horse, as it were?
No. Well, what does that mean? It means that if you pontificate or if you put forth your ideas in a very arrogant way, you know what happens when we do that by accident now and again? You fall over pretty fast. And the higher you go, the harder that fall is. You just think, yeah, that wasn't very good. I'm not going to do that again. But I have noticed, and it's an interesting observation, this, that I think it's more important to share emphatically and with a certain fortitude, as you might say, rather than just constantly going, well, maybe this is that, but who knows? It could be this, it could be that. We just don't know. Hey, it's all subjective. It's all different. We don't know anything. That doesn't really help. So if you are going to be forthright in your delivery, spoken or written or otherwise, the only guideline is make sure it's from your own experience and it was hard won, i.e. you went the long way around and you found it out for yourself. Don't use ideologies of someone else. You know, don't argue about something that you actually don't really know anything about. Make sure it's something that you've lived and breathed and bled and sweat. And then you may permit yourself to be quite emphatic about it if you want to be, because no one can argue with that. It's like Van Gogh painting a picture. Got a picture of his up on the website at the moment for an interview I recently did. He paints emphatically. He's not pissing about. He's not suggesting. He's saying, this is this. This is how I see it. And if you like it, brilliant. And if you don't, that's fine. Just go away. But this is what I see. And there's no argument there. And that's, I think, in my game, that's what you're doing. I'm just saying, look, this is what I see. This is how I see it. Take it or leave it.
Now, apparently, he didn't even start painting until he was 30 plus, and he never made a dime until before he died out of it.
He didn't. So it's one of those things where it's not just a chosen, gentle mode of expression, like somebody might choose to pick up, you know, the cello in later life as something nice to do on a Sunday afternoon. It was something burning inside him, something, an energy that he had to express, to discharge. You know, like some guys want to go out and beat the chest and discharge that energy, and you can do it on a football field, or you can have 10 pints of lager and smash somebody's head in, or you can, you know, go running or something. But you need, sometimes that energy builds up in one. Sometimes it's physical, sometimes it's creative or psychological energy, and it fizzes up. And Van Gogh was one of those guys who, there's a very thin line between what fizzed up in his mentality and what we see on the canvas. You know, it's almost a direct image of the two. There's not a lot between those two things. And that's what I try to do in my work, is say, look, this is very much me. This is very much my flavor. And there's not an awful lot of interpretation here. It's not abstracted a long way from what's in my head. And therefore, it has a certain authenticity by virtue of the fact that I'm not tarting it up, as you might say.
Mm. Now, switching gears here a little bit, there was an incident in New Zealand, I think a couple of days ago, a day or two ago, where a man in a small town in New Zealand called Taumarunui was running around pointing guns at families' homes. He never fired a round, and at about 11:35 he was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
But the police response to this, 50 cops descended on the town. The first lot of them were a SWAT team who were flown in by helicopter. And they, this is the funny part, in order to solve the problem of somebody pointing guns at and scaring mothers and young children and things of that nature, the police set up roadblocks in and out of town, heavily armed, and started pointing guns at everybody who was coming in and out of the town and searching all their cars.
Yeah. Yeah, ironic that, isn't it? Very ironic. And it just goes to show what can happen when this is viewed through the corporate media lens. It's the wrong answer, that, isn't it? And yet we're being asked to consent to that to be the right answer, and it actually isn't. So I've been waffling about this recently and trying to do my best to give a good view of it because of, you know, this Sandy Hook shooting in Newtown, Connecticut in December 2012. It brings up a lot of issues, that there's no doubt about it. And my bottom line on it is, while ideologically it's tempting to say we shouldn't have any weapons, when you're under siege from an empire that we have handed control to, and there is one empire, and there always has been, and it just changes its robes every few centuries. If you give your power to that empire, give everything to them. Give them the guns, give them your money, give everything to them, and don't stop until you've given them all your consciousness and all your sovereignty. Give everything to them, right? That's what should happen. Now, if you're an individual, if you recognize your sovereignty, that you're born on this planet, you show up, and that's your business, no one else's, right? You don't have to pay to be here. You don't have to sign documents to be here. There's no license required to be a human being. When you realize that philosophically, really internalize it, you see how silly it is to give any freedom away whatsoever. So if you want to have a gun, right? And if you want to use foul language. And if you want to be a dick, be a dick. It's up to you. But as it happens, when you resonate that sovereignty and you resonate your honor as a natural human being, you want to behave in a fine manner. You want to treat each other well and treat your community and your family and your friends and your colleagues well and learn from each other and so on and so forth. So preserving the Constitution presents the ideologist with a very tricky problem, which is things aren't sufficient yet where it's a sensible idea to do away with a written constitution, because it does serve a purpose in preserving certain basic guidelines, right? And we're not quite at the position yet where we can throw that out. So the idea of only having the government and government-sponsored agencies with the weapons is rather stupid to me. It's rather silly, you know? And it symbolizes a problem that a lot of people have in this alternative movement, which is, as I said recently on this Romecast that I do on the website, they think they've taken the red pill, but they're actually secretly still popping the blue pill on the side, you know? They still want the world to be okay. And they're trying to run both tracks at the same time, saying, look, I'm an independent, amazing, different person. I'm out of the matrix. And yet, I've got my other foot in the matrix, and I'm lobbying Parliament and lobbying Congress and trying to get guns off the streets and out of the hands of the kids and stuff. You can't do both those things at the same time. You have to go to the very root of it. And the root of it is that we have to decide what's right for ourselves. The government aren't the people who do that for us. We do it.
It's absolutely correct. After all, I don't think that there's anything that the government's told me over my period of, I don't think of how long have I been on this planet? About 28 years. I don't think there's anything they've ever told me that's really panned out.
That's right. It's not. It's just not useful, is it?
No. And I think the worst thing that anybody can ever do is give trust to somebody who's not trustworthy, because then there's untold damage they can do. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Neil Kramer is my guest. We'll be right back.
The word is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Sure it's there.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest this hour and the next, maybe in this realm of the universe and the next, Neil Kramer from neilkramer.com. That's Kramer with a K, like the KKK, except he's not that racist.
Thanks for that.
Allegedly. Now, we were talking about how many radio shows you're on. You're on about maybe 3 to 4 different radio shows per month. When you go to neilkramer.com, ladies and gentlemen, you see this long list of kind of all these different shows that he's on. He's getting out there like swine flu.
Swine flu, another lovely image. That thanks for that, Vinny. Yeah,
it's spreading, but it doesn't seem to cause too much damage.
It's like a sexually transmitted philosophy. That's right.
Apparently you can get across quite a lot of decent philosophy through pillow talk.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different kind of conversation, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah,
but let's not go there.
There's definitely lots of people who want to talk about the reality of the world and have realized, I think perhaps 10 years ago, conspiracy had its day, as you might say. And there's a lot of people thinking, well, that's an interesting area of study. But there comes a point where you think, yeah, okay, there's people trying to do stuff. And now we've scratched through the exoteric shell and we look at the esoteric core. That's been going on for like 20,000 years. So that's nothing new, right? But the difference is right now that because of media, we can get this very granular, high-definition level of detail on how peculiar and ugly that can sometimes be. And I'm sure you've come across this, but a lot of people get lost in that and they get stuck in the mire, as you might say. They get in the swamp and they can't get out again. And it destroys people's positivity and marriages and relationships and work and happiness and their ability to just to be a full, you know, rounded human being. It stops them being able to do that. So when I kind of detect that going on, perhaps particularly in 2005 and 6 in the UK, it was getting very fascist there at that time. I thought, well, I'm going to try and do something about that. I'm going to try and say, we can't ignore this shadow stuff of the world, just like you can't ignore the negative end of the battery, right? Your Duracell battery, because if you do, it doesn't work, right? The whole thing doesn't work. So a lot of what I do is exploring the relationship between positive and negative. It's an old Rosicrucian principle, that of polarity in the world, where everything has this pair of opposites that work together. And fundamentally, what it's doing is showing you that if you've gone too positive, you've got it wrong. And if you go too negative, you've got it wrong. And what they actually do is map the shape of the energy, if you like. So you go map the positivity, then map the negativity. And from doing those two navigational exercises, you can then determine what the central point is. And that's the sweet spot where you say, right, I have examined the very darkest, crudest, grotesque things of the world, the violence and injustice and whatnot. And I have also investigated the most glorious, mystical, transcendental magic of the world, which is indisputable. And through knowing those two things, I can achieve a certain equilibrium where everything is possible. That is the purpose, to some extent, of what this is all about. Life on Earth in the 3D, in the third density, is all about navigating polarity in your own life as well. You know, good days and bad days, good relationships, bad relationships, strong feelings of wonderfulness and weird feelings of melancholy and depression. All those things, we have to map them. And as you get good at that, you start to gain a certain degree of control over how those energies actually influence you. You know, they're kind of like, it's like an ecology. If you're in a little fish in the sea, you can't control the currents necessarily, and you can't control the temperature, but you can learn to move with it in a certain manner where it's never going to influence you unduly. And so that's the purpose of this, and that's, you know, what I discuss in my book, The Unfoldment, which is, well, what is the sweet spot? What does it look like to not deny what happened on 9/11 and to not deny the importance of Tibetan-born esoteric mysticism? What happens when you bring those two things together? What happens in that crucible when you take a flame to it? And that's what I do with my work, to say, well, that's what we have to do. So you develop a certain propensity for being a navigator, for being a journeyman, and you realize that you're always moving and that truth is always evolving, and you keep refining it and refining it all the time. And it's a very wonderful thing, you know.
Have you ever by chance come across people who say that you talk about the negative, not saying that you focus on the negative, but by saying that you ever talk about the negative, that reinforces it and it makes it worse, and therefore you should completely ignore it and only focus on love and light and positivity?
Yeah, I come across those people and then turn me back on them and say, good luck with that. That is a very entry-level observance, that. And whilst there is some truth in it, which is where you put your attention, that thing becomes magnified. That is an operationally true bit of universal mechanics. That's true, right? But that isn't where it stops. And you will notice that if you observe people who live by that principle, i.e. those who hold the hand up and say, hey, wait, I don't do negative, I don't do that stuff, right? So just stop that talk, I don't allow that in. Those people lack balance, and they lack humor and warmth, and they lack strength, right? And the reason is because they're tipping too far to the positive pole, and they're starting to disown through trying to ignore the incredible power of the negative, right? And you could say the negative is where we destroy and the positive is where we create. And unless you have a good balance of those two things in your life, you're going to end up in a mess. If all you ever do is create, you're going to fill yourself up with nonsense, and there's going to be stagnation, in just the same manner that if all you ever do is destroy, you're going to end up in an empty place. So there's a point in the middle where you say, right, fundamentally, we could collapse the entire universal dynamic of a human being into creation and destruction. And you can map that right down to what? Brushing your teeth, getting in the car, writing an essay, having a conversation, having a beer with your mates, or what goes on the global stage, or what goes on in the solar system. It's the same dynamic, the same hermetic as above, so below dynamic. And when you see it in that way, you sort of diffuse the principle of it being good and evil, which is the primary thing you're trying to take people away from, not viewing things as good and evil, because they don't exist at all. They don't exist at all. What you're looking for is balance, is harmony, is equilibrium. And you can feel that in a person, and you can feel it when it's absent in a person. And those who only cleave to the positive lack that. And it's part of their journey, and we have to honor that and realize where they're up to and be respectful in a manner when we see that in somebody. But know in your heart that that isn't the answer. Ignoring the negative amplifies the negative. It's the reverse of what they think.
Mm. And they would perhaps see you criticizing a politician and then come up to you and say, you're just projecting, because when you criticize this person, what you're really doing is just highlighting the things that could be critiqued about yourself.
Yeah, naturally. You know, that would be in a mainstream paradigm, psychological way of thinking, that there's some truth in that, and we cannot help but project onto other people aspects of ourself. And you cannot help but notice that when you have a good relationship with somebody, whether it's your friend or your wife or your girlfriend or whatever, you realize that there's the same dynamic going on, which is you hold up this mirror to each other and say, I'm going to show you something about yourself that you cannot see all on your own. So we have these human intimacies to achieve that. And so once you get to a certain level with that, you cease to project quite so much onto other people. I would say that if I track back the last 5, 10, 15 years, I can see that decrease in my life. It's become less and less necessary for me to project me onto other people. But if you don't think about it, if you're never conscious of that dynamic, you can't help but do it. So it requires a certain level of self-awareness to stop doing that, right?
Mm. It's like, have you ever seen or had these conversations where one person will tell you who you are? You're a conspiracy theorist. And then your response is, you're a dumbed-down slave. And so you've got a conversation
with
two
incorrect answers,
where two people are describing each other when they don't know each other.
Absolutely. And as a good way to look at that is to say, you, as Vincent Eastwood, is it? Sorry?
Yes.
Vincent Eastwood, Vinny Eastwood, you just about are getting a handle on who you are, aren't you? You're starting to see it. You're starting to get a feel for what you're capable of. As for anybody else, they are simply not ever going to be in a position to know anything about you. And once we realize that about ourselves and other people, we can stop trying to categorize, because it's just a sort of fallacy, really. It's useful as shorthand, but it's not very true.
It depends what's your priority. Do you want other people's approval of your actions and who you are? Or do you want to be able to be comfortable with who you are?
Absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head. Absolutely. Couldn't put it better myself. Yeah, nice.
be right back after the break with my very special guest, Neil Kramer from neilkramer.com. And thank you. I always like to thank the listeners for listening because, you know, it's your personal choice to listen into this show. And I'm really honored by the fact that you do and support me in all the eclectic ways that I get supported. We'll be right back.